Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's about 7 seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTLO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My guests today will include Margie Hamburger from the City Museum. They're opening up on June 2nd. She's got a lot of information about some tours and a lecture that are coming up right away. Pastor Terry Stage Harvey, the Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church, is sponsoring a bike rodeo in the Children's Safety Fair this weekend. Jill Ramel, who is in charge of the Silver Bowl Wine Bar, is going to come in and update our new Juneau Wine Bar that's been around for about a year. Juliana Bibb is the first performer, I believe, in the Music on the Fly series, so she'll be doing live music Sunday at the airport. And Tenny Benson and Sari Lewis will drop in to tell us about the 4-H Alaskan Skills and Adventure Camp coming up right away. So it's all of that today on Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Half of the U.S. Senate sent a letter to the NFL this week asking the league to force the Washington team to change its name. Matt Laszlo has more.
The Redskins' name controversy has been dwarfed by the racist rant that forced the NBA to give the owner of the L.A. Clippers a lifetime ban from pro basketball. But 50 Democratic U.S. senators are piggybacking on that controversy and highlighting the deep offense felt throughout Indian country over the racial slur attached to the Washington football team. Ben Cardin is a senator from Maryland, where the Redskins Stadium is located.
Sports have been getting in the news for other than sports these days, so there's much more public attention to it. But there is a responsibility on the professional teams generally. They are a unique aspect of America, and I think there is a standard that the public looks to from our professional sports teams and their owners.
While the letter from half of the U.S. Senate may not force a name change, it's being praised by many tribal leaders across the nation. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The NFL response to the letter is that the team's name is to present a strong, positive, and respectful image, and it's not used in any other context. Washington team owner Dan Snyder has long opposed the name change. The Council of the Northwest Tribe says they'll let members decide on allowing same-sex marriage. KWSO's Will Robbins reports.
The action by the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Tribal Council came just days before the federal court struck down Oregon's ban on same-sex marriages. Prior to Monday's ruling, the Siletz Tribal Council met to discuss the issue and, after hearing from both sides, decided to put it before a vote of the people. Siletz Tribal Council Chairperson Dolores Pigsley said tribal leaders just wanted to make sure everybody was able to say how they felt.
Our main concern and our cause is that everybody's treated equally, and we shouldn't care who you love or who you don't love or who you want to divorce. It would open the door for people to be treated equally.
One other tribe in Oregon, the Coquille Tribe, has already approved same-sex marriages, and if approved, the Siletz would become the second in Oregon and the nation's ninth tribe to give the go-ahead to gay couples wishing to be married. In Oregon, I'm Will Robbins reporting for National Native News.
A New Mexico state official discussed tribal infrastructure needs this week. He was among tribal and business leaders at the New Mexico Native American Economic Summit. Tristan Autone reports.
It's called the Tribal Infrastructure Fund. It's paid for by taxpayer dollars, and what it does is provide money to tribal businesses to get off the ground. Not all the money, mind you, but matching money. For instance, if you have a project that costs around $10 million to fund, the state is happy to kick in a portion of what you need, but you'll also have to look at other sources to get the rest of it. Arthur Allison serves as New Mexico Indian Affairs Secretary.
If we're talking business, if we're talking about tribal development, infrastructure is really key in doing that. Sometimes even the hard infrastructure, which is potable water, wastewater, electricity, is so much in need on reservation lands, like in some of the Navajo lands, for example, in New Mexico. And so those are the monies that go into those, just to develop those basic infrastructure that's needed in those communities.
Allison says the state's legislature, as well as native lawmakers, were instrumental in developing opportunities for tribes and tribal businesses, like the Tribal Infrastructure Fund, and says the state of native businesses in New Mexico is generally positive. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
On this day in 1939, Indian Reorganization Act Constitution and bylaws were ratified for several Alaska Native villages, including Kotzebue and Point Lay. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. You're invited to Kawanic Broadcast Corporation's second annual reception and fundraiser, Thursday, June 5th, at Sandia Resort & Casino in Albuquerque. Enjoy the art auction, meet Kawanic's board and staff, and help raise funds for Native Radio. Learn more at nativenews.net. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Just coming up on 6 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting your Juneau Afternoon presentation this afternoon. My first guest is going to tell us about the reopening of one of my favorite places here in Juneau. The City Museum has been closed for the month of May due to an upgrade of their HVAC system, but Margie Hamburger is here to announce that on June 2nd, we'll be able to go back into the museum. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. We'll be back in business.
Good enough. Well, we're anxious to see you coming back online. It's a great attraction for our tourists, and it's a shame to have to walk them past the museum and say, well, it's not open today.
Well, we were hoping this would get done sooner before the tourist season, but, you know, things happen, and so we just have to go with it. But we'll be back up the second, and we'll have a couple of new exhibits that I think people are going to be really excited about. A quilt exhibit that we did in collaboration with the Capital City Quilters, and then the Empty Chair exhibit, which is in collaboration with the Empty Chair Committee and the Empty Chair Memorial that's being installed up at Capitol Park this
when
year.
When will that be installed? Do we have a date?
Well, it's being installed this summer. I don't know when it's actually going to be officially, you know, put in. I know they've broken ground and they've been doing some stuff up there, but there's going to be July 12th is the official dedication. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be a big ceremony up at the park, and then we're going to host a reception all afternoon on the July 12th, so people should put
this
that on their calendar.
It's been a long time coming, but it really honors a wonderful thing that happened in
Juneau. About the Japanese internment and that whole piece of history.
Sad and wonderful, because the young man who was valedictorian, who was specially graduated, and then an empty chair placed in the regular graduation ceremony.
Correct. So we're excited to be partners in that story, or telling that story. But we do have some things going on, even though the museum is closed, but that doesn't mean that we stop celebrating history. And we have a couple of walking tours that we're doing right now, and actually they've had a good turnout, and I have room for one more tonight. So if there's anybody out there who wants to go walking at 5:30, give the museum a quick call, and we'll see if we can slot you in. Tuesdays is full, but we do walking tours all throughout the summer. Of course, the tourists and visitors tend to be the ones that show up for those, but we're happy to have locals too. So, and I'm always happy to schedule a special tour for somebody if there's a group of about four or more people who want to get together and learn more about history. Call us up, and we'll organize something.
Well, Margie, I have to say, I did that walking tour last year, and it is absolutely fascinating. You can walk through this town and look up at those old houses, and you really don't know exactly what you're looking at. But one of the staff members from the museum knows history way back to when, and it's just wonderful to walk through and see all of that stuff and hear the stories and like that.
Right. Get
to know the town better.
Right. And another thing to get to know is mining. Of course, that's a big topic here. So next Friday, week from today, we have a lecture. Every year we do what we call our annual mining lecture. So this year, Mike Satry from Hecla Greens Creek Mine is our featured speaker. He has a presentation. He calls it Mining 101. So kind of for the layperson, what are some? How does hard rock mining done? How was it done historically, and how is it done today, and the different choices about that? So that's actually going to happen at Centennial Hall, because we're our building is closed. Centennial Hall at 7 o'clock next Friday, the 30th.
And this is not in the big hall. It's in another room.
Right, in the Hickel room.
In
so we're a little
room.
Bit more cozy.
That's one of those small meeting rooms in the kind of circular entrance
Correct.
Area
Correct.
When you enter from the parking lot.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And so people can call the museum if they'd like to reserve, or they can just show up and pay at the door. So there is
What's
a fee.
What's the fee for this?
The fee is $10 general admission and $7 for seniors and children.
Okay. Now, these fees that you collect for the presentations and the things that you do, and there is a fee for entering the museum, we should realize that this really is, well, first of all, it's incredibly inexpensive to visit the City Museum. It's a wonderful rate, but it also goes to support the collections and the other activities of the museum.
Oh, everything costs money, fortunately or unfortunately. So we do a lot of free events, particularly in the off-season and, the non-tour season, but, there are times when we do have to charge some money to help support the endeavor. And speaking of money, I also want to make sure I squeak in here that we give money as well.
Yes.
So we
you have a grant program.
The Junior History Grant. Right.
Yeah.
And the deadline for that is June 30th. So if there's anybody out there that is contemplating that, they should probably jump on our website, get the application form and all that kind of information, and think about applying. This year we had three recipients of some funding. We gave some money to Claire Richardson, who did a project around the Kennedy Street, celebrating Kennedy Street and Star Hill, and did a portrait and had a big block party. The Sister City Committee got some money to upgrade their display at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go, you have to go through security.
You have about four sister cities? Is that
I think there's more now, actually.
Oh, are there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other group was the Retired Teachers Association. They published a book a bunch of years ago, but it was in need of updating and also just improving because it was done in old-fashioned times. But now we can do publishing a lot more slick. Mm-hmm. So they've been working actually with Alaska Litho to republish and add photographs and republish that book. So we gave them some support on that project for telling stories of teachers in Alaska, or teachers in Juneau, actually.
So you had an individual and then two organizations.
Correct.
That won grants
right.
last year. So both organizations, individuals.
Right, apply. School groups. Sometimes we've had teachers that apply, individuals, organizations, anybody who wants to do something having to do with Juneau history, and particularly something that then has a product that can be shared with the public and increases our education, whether it's a book or a play or a signage somewhere, like the Mike Pusich Douglas Boat Harbor that was funded with history grant funds out at Douglas to give the information about who Mike Pusich was and why the harbor's named after him.
What's the size of the average grant?
It
Is
ranges.
There an average?
I'd say somewhere between, say, 500 to 1,500. Something that's really needy for more, possibly could get more, but that's sort of the average range.
So you can undertake a pretty enthusiastic project.
Yeah.
$1,500 isn't change.
Right,
know?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if people have questions or haven't written a grant, because we really do encourage amateurs who just have a passion for history, so it might be that they're not familiar with writing grants, call us up again and we'll match you with a mentor to help you figure out how to do that.
Margie, a lot of people walk past the front of the City Museum, and I'm not sure people know. There's a wonderful couple of totem poles on the corners.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have two out front.
We have two out front.
Yeah,
yep,
and
yep.
Then the other thing that's of real great interest is the flagpole of the City Museum is
right.
The only place in the United States that is allowed to still fly a 7x7 49-star flag
that's
in honor
correct.
Of our statehood.
That's correct, because that was the site of raising the flag for the first time, and then. You said you remember some of that. I remember the 50th anniversary and that whole celebration when it was reenacted, so to speak. That's a special place, and we point that out to
really. And the two totem poles have really interesting themes to them. I think one of them has to do with atomic energy.
Right,
right.
One's about atomic energy, and the other one's called the four-story pole. And it doesn't mean four-story in terms of a building of four stories, but four stories that you can tell about the
right.
pole.
Yeah.
I just realized recently that actually used to be up on Capitol. In Capitol Park is where it was installed.
Oh, okay.
And then it was moved down to
moved
the
to
museum
here.
When
yeah.
the museum moved into what was the old library.
Well, the City Museum of Juneau is a really wonderful place. I think one of the best things about it is it's a museum you can hold in your hands. It's human dimension, kind of. You can
right.
walk through there and sort of feel like you're part of the whole panoply.
And I think people are. I mean, it's our museum. It's our city museum. So it tells the story of the people who live here.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in, for filling us in on all of these wonderful things that are going on with the museum. And we invite everyone to take advantage of next Friday's Centennial Hall presentation with Mike Satre talking about mining. There is, as we said, one slot for the walking tour. It's at 5:30 tonight. Would someone who wanted to do it just show up?
They could probably just show up, and we can make that.
And there is a small fee for the walking tour.
There is a fee for the walking tour,
right, well. And for the mining thing as well.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for telling us all these things.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And we're all looking forward to June 2nd when you come back online.
Great.
This is Bird Note. The loud bugling call of gulls is unmistakable. One of nature's most familiar voices. Can't you just smell the salt air of the seashore, where no ocean view would be complete without a few gulls flying by? Gulls seem so much a part of the sea that we often just call them seagulls, a colloquial title for these graceful, ubiquitous creatures. Although a fixture on many beaches, most gulls aren't truly seafaring birds. Most never venture far from the shoreline. What gulls prefer overall are open areas, like beaches, lakes, ball fields, and pastures, not to mention landfills. In May, most gulls are nesting. 22 species breed in North America. Some nest inland, some along coastlines. The familiar ring-billed gull nests all across northern states and Canadian provinces. Herring gulls breed by the millions along the Great Lakes and northeast waterways, while laughing gulls nest all along the Atlantic and Gulf coasts. The Pacific coast is home to vast numbers of aptly named western gulls. Whether you call them gulls or seagulls, just remember that a movie scene of a ship far out at sea surrounded by braying gulls was likely filmed just off the beach. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Great thing about this job is you get to meet the people that you see who are famous around town. Pastor Terry Stage Harvey of the Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church is here with us, and I've been reading her editorials in the newspaper since I moved to Juneau. She's and I just met her just 2 minutes ago. We introduced ourselves to each other and like that. You've got a really exciting program coming up. You've done this a couple of times before, but this is a bike rodeo and a children's safety fair coming up this weekend?
Not quite this weekend.
Oh,
it's on June the 8th.
Oh, okay.
But it's coming up very soon, and I realize people's summer schedules fill up fast.
Yeah.
And once kids are out of school, it's like you lose all sense of time. But several years ago, I'm also coordinator for the Food Resource Summit here in Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple years ago, we realized that one of the gaps that we experienced in this town was the summer, that all of us saw our food pantries hit really hard in the summer, and that didn't make sense because we're like, lots of people are working and there's all this going on. But then it's like, because kids are home.
Yeah.
And the
school
lunches
yeah.
and all that put a huge stress on families who are already kind of struggling with those resources. So we did the summer lunch 3 years ago and realized transportation was a huge issue. It was a little too far for some
Shepherd
kids
of the Valley
to walk.
Is quite a ways out toward the glacier.
It's
so,
out. Yes. It's across from Taku Boulevard out that way.
Yeah.
And so the next year we said, we really don't want a van. We don't want to do the pick everyone up kind of thing. So we said, how about a bike?
Yeah.
And that we teach kids, here's how you safely ride your bike. A lot of, I'd go visit kids and they'd have four bikes in the yard, but none of them worked. So it's like, let's get those working.
Yeah.
Let's get some helmets fitted for you.
Yeah.
And then we hook them up with some of our middle schoolers, the younger ones, so that they have buddies to ride to the summer lunch program
with. What a great plan.
You know,
yeah.
And it was. I mean, it was really fun to watch it in action last year. And the freewheelers here in town have been fabulous, fixing up bikes for us to give away. And it is. It's a neat way to kick it off, and I think it helps parents, too, because they come, they see that it's a safe place for their kids to be, and then we just serve great food and have all kinds of fun activities all summer.
You got a typical menu just out of the blue?
I didn't mean to pin you here.
Oh,
no. We like our pattern. So Monday is ground beef day, so it's either tacos or sloppy joes.
Okay.
Tuesdays are chicken, so the baked chicken and mashed potatoes and chicken noodle casserole. Mm-hmm. And Wednesdays are the scary days because that's when the kids cook.
Oh,
and
okay.
Every single kid who shows up learns some kind of skill in the kitchen.
Okay.
From the 4-year-olds to the 16-year-olds.
All right.
And they prepare the meal for that day. Thursdays we do soup or burgers on the grill, and then Fridays the kids grill their own sandwiches.
Okay. So 5 days a week.
So it's 5 days a week.
And no charge.
Nope.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
Just show up.
And how many can you handle?
So I think we maxed out.
Not that you're going to turn anybody away.
No,
but,
no.
Yeah, no, but
we started to feel a little anxious. We hit 51 day last year, and it was, okay, this is probably enough for us.
But you're looking around to see if the guy with the basket with the loaves and the fishes.
Right. And you know, the miracle of church meals is that does happen more often than you know.
Yeah.
So it is, but we averaged about 35 to 45 kids, and that was great. And I'd have folks come in. We do up a room, this room into this big reading room. And tons of teachers come and volunteer. That's what I love. They get to hang out with kids without it being so structured and getting ready for a test and all that, but to just enjoy that time. So the kids will read. They normally have to read at least 10 minutes a day when they're with us. And And again, we hook them up with buddies. If they can't read, they have someone to read to them.
Mm-hmm. And so you'll take them all the way down to, you said, 4 years old?
We do, yep.
Yeah.
As long as they can go to the bathroom on their own,
okay. We're
pretty happy.
And how long does a child stay for the program?
So they can drop in any time after noon.
Okay.
So from 12 o'clock on, from 12 to 12:30, we have organized outdoor recreation with an AmeriCorps volunteer.
Uh-huh.
At 12:30, they can enter the church and we serve the meal. And then each day has a special activity. We have a science day where they do experiments, a craft day. We do a gardening day. We do music and Bible stories. That all those things happen on different days, and the kids may opt to do that special activity or to read or to go out and play.
Uh-huh.
And then by 2 o'clock, they need to
be picked up or they need to get on their bikes
yep,
and
they need
go
to
home.
Head out.
Yeah,
and that,
okay.
You know what I find is that's enough structure for kids. About that time, they're getting sick of the TV and screens and all that. And we have a very strict no screen policy. So while they're there, your phone goes away, your DS and all the other junk they carry. I mean, stuff. Wonderful gadgets.
All those toys that they carry with them, right? Okay. If somebody wants more information, or if they didn't quite get all the information we gave them, who would they contact?
They can call the church.
Okay. Got a phone number?
789-4093.
789-4093. Okay, and if somebody has questions about the children's lunch program that goes on, and this starts on the 8th?
So we start our program on the bike rodeo is June the 8th, and that's a Sunday, and that Monday we begin.
Okay, so the following Monday, and school's out Thursday, so the timing is just excellent.
So they have about a week to get bored of being at home and restless, and then they can start.
And they can start working with you.
Now there are two new programs that we're super excited about, and these aren't connected with Shepherd of the Valley, but they're out of the Food Resource Summit, and one is in Greening Park, and that will begin on June the 2nd. And they will have lunch from noon to 1 at the rec center there.
Okay.
And then over in Geneva Woods, also beginning on June 2nd, they'll serve lunch from 11:30 to 1.
Outstanding.
It is. It's
terrific,
very
summer
exciting.
Yeah, terrific summer programs, and keep the kids fed and happy, and also get them on bikes and get them riding, because we have such great bike trails around Juneau that shame not to. Yeah, you can ride all the way out to the glacier down the side of the road there, and you're out of traffic and everything like that. And you can actually make it all the way from the valley to town if you know the route.
You can, but it does make me nervous.
It does. There's some of that goes right in the middle of the
street. For drivers to be very aware that kids are riding and they might not always be on the right side of the road and they might not be looking for you. And so we try to train the kids, you know, make sure you're riding on the right side, you make eye contact with drivers and do all that. But But drivers, please slow down in the summer and keep your eyes open for them.
Outstanding. Terry Stage Harvey, she's pastor of the Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church, runs these wonderful programs. Starting on June 8th, kids can come out to the bike rodeo, and then the following day the luncheon program starts up, and there are the other two luncheon programs she mentioned. Questions? Call 789-4093. Terry, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much
for doing all the work that puts these programs together. Here's a little bike rodeo music for us.
Rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen, keep them doggies rolling, roll hard. All the things I'm missing, good bills, love, and kissing, are waiting at the end of my ride. Move them on,
hit them up,
hit them up,
move them on,
hit them up, rawhide,
cut them out,
ride them in,
cut them out,
cut them out, ride them in.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 23rd of May, 2014. It's the birthday of the poet Jane Kenyon, born Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1947. Lived with the poet Donald Hall, her husband, in New Hampshire. Lived there until her untimely death of leukemia at the age of 47. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote Goodnight Moon, Margaret Wise Brown, born Brooklyn, 1910. She believed that kids would rather read about things in their own world than fairy tales and fables. Wrote nearly 100 picture books under several pen names. She was a lovely blonde, had green eyes, a little eccentric, lived on the Upper East Side of New York. At one time she dated Juan Carlos, the Prince of Spain. When she was 42, she met James Stillman Rockefeller, Jr. He was 26. They were engaged to be married when Margaret Wise Brown died suddenly. She'd had surgery a few weeks before. She was kicking up her leg like a can-can dancer to show her doctor how good she felt. And the kick dislodged a blood clot in her leg, which went to her heart and killed her. She had no children of her own. She left the royalties for most of her books to a 9-year-old neighbor boy, Albert Clark. It came to about $5 million, which he squandered, spending his life in and out of jail, making a series of bad real estate deals. And it's the birthday of the man who, when studying meteorology, gave birth to what became chaos theory, Edward Norton Lorenz, West Hartford, Connecticut, 1917. He coined the term the butterfly effect, trying to explain how small actions in a dynamic system like the atmosphere could trigger vast and unexpected changes. Here's a poem for today by Ellen Bass entitled French Chocolates. If you have your health, you have everything, is something that's said to cheer you up when you come home early and find your lover arched over a stranger in a scarlet thong. Or it could be you lose your job at Happy Nails because you can't stop smudging the stars on those 10 teeny American flags. I don't begrudge you your extravagant vitality. May it blossom like a cherry tree. May the petals of your cardiovascular excellence and the accordion polka of your lungs sweeten the mornings of your loneliness. But for the ill, for you with nerves that fire like a rusted-out burner on an old barbecue, with bones brittle as spun sugar, with a migraine hammering like a blacksmith in the flaming forge of your skull. May you be spared from friends who say, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. And ask what gifts being sick has brought you. May they just keep their mouths shut and give you French chocolates and daffodils and maybe a small original Matisse. Say, open window, colure, so you can look out at the boats floating on the dappled pink water. A poem by Ellen Bass, French Chocolates, from her collection Like a Beggar, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that's been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
About 29 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is going to begin with music.
Wonder if I'll ever find my place. Somewhere where the rivers flow. When the blue skies call my name, I'll remember. Place where everything would be alright. Solitude was a multitude, and the screams would hold me close. The scars I left upon the world were small and simple then, and I could build up cities and fly among the stars. But suddenly I realized it was all we'd have to learn. Something grew inside my heart that day. The day I learned that nothing is ever as it seems. All these lies and wars and truth, they are all pushed off to the side. With eyes that always saw too much and yearned to understand, suddenly I decided to just write a song instead. I'll ever find the truth. Inside every painted smile and broken argument, I'll remember. Place where everything would be alright. Everywhere that I would go, I could always find a friend. And suddenly I realized that it all was just a dream. Something died inside my heart that day. The day I learned that nothing is ever as it seems. These lies and wars and truth, they are all pushed off to the side. And with eyes that always saw too much and yearned to understand, finally I decided to just write a song instead. Suddenly decided to just write a song instead.
Yeah, and writing a song seems to be what this lady does. The voice, of course, belongs to Juliana Bibb. A lot of people have heard her in the area here since she started out with the music festival, I think, back in 2009 as a mere child. Yeah. And now you're playing a special gig that's been going on. I think this is the second season of Music on the Fly.
I think so.
Yeah, I started it last year, I believe. So this is a program that was started by the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, and basically a musician or band band or group goes out to the airport and plays live music in the airport, much to the shock and surprise of the departing passengers. A little concert on their way through the TSA line. So where are you going to set up? Where will you actually physically be? Do you know?
I think I'm going to decide on the fancy little seating area. They got the cushions going on there.
Next to the bear, there at the where people get off and on.
I'll just be there with my guitar, maybe my outer harp as well.
Yeah.
And tip jar, and I won't be mic'd. I'll just be.
So as people walk by, there will be this beautiful young lady singing and playing guitar, and everybody will say, oh, gee, I wonder if she's trying to raise money to get out of town.
Well, that's up to the imagination.
We'll play for airfare, right?
Yeah.
So this is going to be different from singing where people are there to listen to you, because the people will not. How are you going to get their attention? What's your plan?
I haven't really thought about that.
Because
the description is, you know, to provide a nice, calming music for the passengers. But, oh, there's a couple of loud choruses. Because I chose that particular song because it's definitely more folk's roots.
Uh-huh.
I wrote it last year around Folkfest time. But several of my other songs are much more modern influenced with rock and darker themes, so maybe that will get their attention.
Yeah,
who knows?
Probably should not sing a song about, you know, the wreck of a large aircraft or something.
Oh,
like that.
I know.
Probably not appropriate material. But anyway, so what do you do when someone walks past you and they drop money in the tip jar? Do you acknowledge it? What do you do? You give them a little nod or
a little nod? You know.
Yeah. Okay.
Whatever you can do.
Yeah.
Only you're in the process, can't really interrupt the singing.
Yeah. But it's an interesting kind of interaction, I would imagine, because these are total strangers. They walk by, and if they drop money in the jar, is there a difference between, do you see people who drop the money in the jar because there's a jar there and people who drop the money in the jar because they like your music? Do you notice it? I think some of us feel like it's a duty. When someone is playing on the street, you know, you feel like you ought to drop a buck in, but then other people will put money in because they've been standing there listening to you for a while and they're kind of nodding and tapping their feet and like that. Do you get that?
Oh, you know, that's the hope. I've tried busking before on the streets.
Oh, yeah?
To not very much avail. But, at Folkfest, I've hung out there a lot. Uh-huh. Sometimes, you know, you just hang out and play your guitar a little bit. Never had a jar out, but, you know, people will stop by and compliment me and say.
Yeah, at the Folkfest, if you're not lucky, you might wind up with 20 or 30 people playing with you. Not careful.
It's a new experience. You don't know exactly what to expect, but I'm ready for it. Hoping.
So you've got you've got 3 CDs, I think, at this point. Is that?
They're not like released anywhere.
Oh,
they
okay.
were.
So you have to find them online. Is that the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just. I called them CDs. You know, the first you mentioned listening to my album Remember, which I made in 2009, I believe. I went and got, you know, blank CDs from my mom and made 9 copies on my own.
Oh, okay.
And
did they all sell?
I sold 2 of them to my aunt.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But, yeah, that was just me always just getting on the initiative. Even though I look back at that and I think it's utter. It's just not worth anyone's listen, but...
Yeah. Actually, there's a couple of pretty good songs on there.
Oh, really?
Juliana, do you have aspirations of recording? Are you going to try for a real CD?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Studio A here in town.
Oh, okay.
Looking at recording with them. Hopefully this summer, if not... I'm going to be going to college in Fairbanks for the next few years.
Oh, okay.
So when I'm back in town during the summer... Hopefully that will work out.
Well, definitely take your guitar up there. There's going to be all kinds of opportunities to play. That's a very musical town.
Yeah. So I've heard.
Yeah. So what are you going to study? What's the plan?
Japanese studies.
Oh, my. That's startling. How did this interest come about? Did you take Japanese here when you were going through high school?
I did. But I was always a fan of Japanese cartoons and comics in middle school. And... There were several series that I couldn't actually get, you know, through
English publishers that would be available online, translated by fans. And some of those translations were just unreadable. And I had my little shining light moment thinking, you know, if I want good translations, I better just learn Japanese and do it myself.
Mm-hmm. So is there a strong Japanese program at the UIF? It's not one I've heard of. Okay.
So they have one for a thing. Yeah. That's the start.
Will you have the opportunity to go to Japan as part of it?
Yes, that's part of the program.
Well, now there's a major attraction right there.
No, definitely.
Yeah. Well, you know almost nothing of a language until you're on the street in the country where it's spoken, and then all of a sudden you discover how ignorant you really are, and then shortly after that you start to be very thankful for all those lessons that you had in grammar because they make sense for the first time. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so when will you be out at the airport? What time can, if someone, by the way, that's another part of this, is if you want to just go listen, you're certainly welcome to. You don't have to be traveling. You can go up to the airport and just hang out with Juliana while she's playing. What time's your gig?
6:45 this Sunday. 6:45 to 7:45 is my slot.
Okay, good enough. Okay, well, listen, thank you very much. Can we go out with a little bit more of the auto harp and your lovely voice?
Yes, this one I actually prepared, so hopefully it'll go a little bit better.
Okay.
But this one is called On the Hardwood Floor. It's, as I mentioned, a little darker, a little more heavy rock influenced, but still on the auto harp. And yeah, I wrote this while I was still in California for school. And it's the reaction to a bit more dark emotional times, but, you know, always trying to find a way to get through it. So yeah, this is On the Hardwood Floor. I've got a heart that's bound to break with everything I've had to take. Although I've led a sheltered life, kind and gentle, free of strife, you've let me know that I'm feeble and I'm childish, I'm cruel and fiendish, obviously everything that I do is meant to hurt you. You're the only one whose feelings even matter at all. I've got hands bound to fumble, if you gotta get me when I'm down, at least pull your punches, please don't shout. I'll listen to every word you have to say, and then I will sing the pain away. I don't care at all about you, that's a choice I've to the floor, so I'll spit the blood out of your feet, laugh it off and say no more. And I don't care at all about
Giuliani, you make me wish I was flying on Sunday.
Oh,
hey,
thank
she's
going to
be playing out at the airport, live music, Music on the Fly. The artist is Juliana Bibb. Drop by the airport. Take a listen. If you're flying in or out, go a half hour early and listen to the music. Okay. Thank you so much for doing this. Thanks so much for coming on the show and giving us some live music.
Thank you. You're welcome.
More Juneau residents are choosing a college education at the University of Alaska Southeast. Stay in Alaska. Save money. See the world at UAS. Learn more about what your hometown university has to offer. Make an appointment with an academic advisor today at 796-6000. Learn, engage, change at UAS. UAS.alaska.edu.
Drinking is a funny thing. It can make you feel strong. It can make you feel really sharp, really in control.
But you're not. When you've been drinking, your reactions are slower and your vision is poor.
That's why it's so dangerous to drink and drive.
That's why traffic crashes are the number one killer of teens.
Play it smart. Don't drink and drive.
This message is presented by KXLL in support of the Taylor White Foundation.
You're in tune with KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. It's just 3:45, and my next guests are here to tell us about an exciting program for kids that's coming up. It used to be called the Sustainable Harvest Camp, but now it's the Alaskan Skills and Adventure Camp, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Here are Tenny Bentz and Sarah Lewis. Tell us all about this.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah, we're very excited.
I am, too.
Well, you should come on out.
Hey.
So what this is the 4-H Alaska Skills and Adventure. I'm with the Cooperative Extension and Tenny.
And I'm with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work together, the Cooperative Extension and Fish and Game, we work together to put this camp together. But it is a 4-H camp, and we've changed the name because, as you said, it used to be called the Sustainable Harvest Camp. But really, after the last couple of years in its development, it's become a lot more than just that. We do a lot of adventure and outdoor skills in general. And Tenny can go ahead and talk about some of the things we'll be doing there.
Yeah, so last year we had tried to incorporate a bunch of harvest. This year we're going to do the harvest. We'll do field dressing of deer. We'll take kids out and harvest wild edibles, do some cooking with them. And then we're also tying in a lot more of the adventure. So last year the kids seemed to love the kayaking. We did overnight survival in shelters where the kids built shelters and stayed the night. We go fishing, do some hiking and you know, a lot of other really fun activities like boating. We might try some crabbing this year. And we're going to have kids sign up ahead of time for the sessions that they're interested in taking so that they can actually pick what they want to take and get a good chunk of time with those activities. So we encourage people to register early.
Where's this all going to be held?
This is going to be held out at the Eagle River Scout Camp.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. Great
Which
place.
Which is a great location. The beach out there is amazing.
How's everybody going to get out there? Are you taking, are you driving out with cars or
we'll
carpooling
actually,
or what?
We'll bus the kids out.
Okay.
Yep.
Great.
And then, of course, walking out to the camp itself, which is always a fun part of the experience. And so it's going to be held August 11th through 15th, so it's the last full week of summer vacation, which is often a really great week because there's not a whole lot of other camps, and it's good to keep your kids going for that last little bit of summer before school starts. We are actually going to have an additional day for kids who are ninth grade and older. If they would like to sign up to be youth leaders. And so they would get to come out on the 10th with the adults as we set everything up, and we can do it. We'll be doing extra activities with them to get them ready to assist some of the younger kids at the camp. So that's a cool thing we're going to do this year as well.
Sarah, is there a fee for the
There camp? Is a fee. It's $175,
okay.
Which is, frankly, a really, really great fee for a five-day overnight camp. It's really, and they, you know, all the food and everything, and we usually have tremendous food out there. It's the best kind of camp food you can get. And they're going to be cooking some of their own food as well.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some scholarships available, and there are scholarships available through the CBJ, and anybody who wants information about that, we'll be happy to let them know.
Okay, and if they want information about that or the program, whom should they call?
They should call Susie at the Cooperative Extension office, which is at 523-3280, extension 0, and they can talk with Susie. They can get registered or just get some more information.
Outstanding. Tenny, anything to add as a tail-ender here?
I think, you know, it's a great camp. The kids have a wonderful time. We just finished with the Becoming an Outdoor Woman program, and the women always ask, well, what can we do with our kids? And this is a great extension of that. So getting the kids out, and it's their chance to kind of learn some of these outdoor skills in a really fun environment. So it's great to have them.
You know, it's funny, especially with your last guest. It was really great. It reminded me that one of the things that we do try to do out there is actually have music involved, too. I don't know if you're familiar with Kay Shoemaker, who used to live here in Juneau. People who've done scouting in Juneau are pretty familiar with her. But she's with 4-H now, and she's a musician. So we always make music. We actually want kids who have instruments to bring them on out, and we add that to the we think that's an important Alaskan skill.
Yeah, we have a pretty good talent show that happens out there.
Outstanding.
Yeah,
great program. August 11th to the 15th, ninth graders can show up on the 10th for part of the
Right, they need to register that specifically.
Okay,
yep, so
good.
When they call, they can get information.
907-523-3280. Lots of information. Call Susie. Right now, Tenny Bentz, Sarah Lewis, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for telling us all about this great program,
thank you.
Alaskan Skills and Adventure Camp.
Turn off the TV, try a new recipe. Tonight will be about family, family and you and me. And slow food, warm up the big old pot. Throw in the stuff we got. Cook up the kind of meal that time forgot. It's slow food. Happy to be with you. Now that the day is through, nothing we have to do but chat and chew our slow. Slow food. Nothing we have to do but chat and chew our slow food. Life is a run around from place to place. Home is a set.
About 8 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. My next guest is here to tell us about a wonderful new addition to Juneau. Gave us some polish and some class on the downtown eating scene. The Silver Bow they tore out the front of the hotel and put in a wine bar in January and opened it up. So Jill Rommel is here. And what's new? What's going on with this wine bar?
What's new? Well, everything about the wine bar is still pretty new because this is our first summer season, so every day is new. We don't know what customer traffic is going to be like yet.
How's it catching on? Is it catching on?
I think so.
Through?
That few weeks where we had beautiful weather was not good to the wine bar. But that's hard to complain about in Juneau, but it's hard to get people to come in and
sit in. I was about to say, you know.
But that's all fun.
Good.
And the one thing to remember about that is you can grab a glass of wine inside the wine bar and take it and sit outside on our fabulous deck.
On your fabulous deck.
Yeah.
Which was completed not too long ago either.
A couple years ago.
Okay. All right. So when you opened the wine bar, part of the advertising was that these were going to be wines that we probably wouldn't find elsewhere.
That is true. That is still the main goal.
Uh-huh.
We just switched from our winter flights to our spring flights, and that's probably the most fun thing we do is pick new wines, taste new wines, pair them together to make what we think would be a fun flight and an interesting experience for people to try things. We wanted to do fun, lighter wines. We had some heavy things going in the winter. People tend to drink more reds in the winter. Mm-hmm. So we added a whole nother white flight, so now we have 4 flights in total, 2 reds, 2 whites. We wanted to do a Sauvignon Blanc flight, and I was talking to John DeCherney about this and what we should name it, what we should do. We started talking about the characteristics of
Sauvignon Blancs, and he said, well, they're bright, they're dry. Oh, just like your husband. We said, great, we're going to name that flight the Ken flight, which we did. And then we said, well, if we have a Ken flight, we really need to have a Barbie flight.
Yeah, okay.
And so we have a red flight named the Barbie, which we said fun and modern and easy.
Mm-hmm.
And that consists of a Cabernet and a Merlot and a Zinfandel. So even
for the two or three listeners we have who might not know what a flight is,
okay,
could you explain what that is?
Of course. A flight is a sample.
Since the first time I heard that phrase about probably 5 years ago, I had to ask somebody what it meant.
Right. It's pretty popular now.
Yeah.
It is the way to sample a few wines together, to compare them with each other. So like our Sauvignon Blanc flight is three.
This is the Ken.
The Ken flight.
Yes, okay.
Is three Sauvignon Blancs from three different regions in the world.
And these are small glasses, so we're not talking about slamming back
But there is an advantage to getting a flight versus just a glass. It is 6 ounces, because there's 2 ounces each instead of a glass pour, which is 5 ounces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is really, it's amazing what you can learn, that you could, maybe you like California Sauvignon Blancs, or maybe you like New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, and they're different from each other.
Now, I got to say, this is like bowling. You don't want to do this alone.
No.
If you're going to go for a flight of wine, you want to go with a friend.
Absolutely.
And get the same flight, both of you, and then work it, and you find out a great deal about the wine, but you also find out a great deal about your friend, which is really one of the best things about wine tasting.
True. Or you can each get a different flight, and then you could try six different wines, which is fun, and how they each pair with food.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a meat platter or cheese platter or
and you have spice. These available as well in the wine bar.
Yep, we have a Nosh menu and different, and they affect your palate. Different cheeses are different with different wines that you drink, and we have some spicy almonds on the menu and some sweet things, some chocolate things, because we have port on our menu. We have a port flight, and that is really fun. You could figure out if you are a tawny person or a ruby person.
Yeah.
I'm a tawny person, just in case you wanted to know.
Well, I had you pegged for a tawny person.
I know.
When you came out. Anyway, so the thing that is nice if you have a good sommelier is getting a little advice.
Mm-hmm.
Wine has a tendency to be kind of overwhelming.
Yeah,
we've made
of course.
Such a big deal out of it, you know, and really it's not.
Right.
But it can be fairly complex, and it's really nice if you have a good sommelier who can kind of say, well, this might work well with that, and like that. And you've pre-planned a lot of these offerings in that way.
A little bit, but we're really trying not to make anybody uncomfortable there. Like, we want everybody to come in, and you could tell us you like anything with anything. Really, it's all just a matter of taste, and we're not going to make anybody feel uncomfortable that they don't know anything. And it's been fun. We call our bartenders flight attendants. And it's been fun finding flight attendants, because there's a lot of people in town that know a lot about wine and love to talk about wine.
Yeah.
So it's been an easy job for us to fill.
Well, this is I love this real addition to downtown, because it's something you can drop in on. Are you getting any drop in tourist trade? Is there are people coming off the boats to?
I haven't seen much. I haven't seen cruise ship traffic, but we have a hotel ourselves. We have an 11-room inn, and I think that's been an amenity for
hotel guests.
And if there's conferences downtown, people will come in after.
But just anybody can come in. And again, I stress absolutely that this is a two-person or several people group. This is a group activity.
It's definitely a fun group activity, and we're open at 5 p.m., 5 to 10, Tuesday through Saturday.
Joel Melk runs the Silverville Wine Bar. Great addition to the downtown city. Lots of interesting things here that people should take advantage of. So go flying with Jill.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org, and support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much from listeners like you. The special offering on Monday, Juneau afternoon, will be a special program. It's a one-hour documentary special called Mine Enemy. It brings to life a nearly forgotten aspect of life on the wartime home front, whose ripples were felt on both sides of the ocean for years to come. Sound-rich program includes the voices of former German POWs and Americans who remember them and archival sound from the period.